Susan. This is the Monadnock Summer Lyceum, hosted by the Unitarian Universalist Church in Peterborough, New Hampshire, and broadcast on New Hampshire Public Radio. We have some time for questions from the audience. While the ushers collect them, let me begin by asking this. First of all, how much money was the bribe?
You cheeky thing. I'm glad I didn't cut them into the international rights, because the book has been published weird in some very unusual places, like South Korea, for example, which is the most technologically insane country on earth, and lots of other places as well. And so, yeah, I'm glad I didn't tie it to the royalties, because the book went places where I never thought it was going to go. They each got the equivalent of the price of a small scooter, which is what my son was, and I mean like a one that goes, you know, not one you push.
My real question is, what do you tell a parent who's at wit's end with a child who refuses to stop playing video games or get off the internet without a major battle, and they're not willing to go 6 months off the internet?
There's a time when you just have to man up as a mother. And as a father, you know, like, and I was the world's biggest pushover, so I hear that, I really do. But there are times when you just have to man up and pull that plug. It's not actually air. It's not water, it's not food, it's not a roof over your head. Information, yes, is very important, but it is, I'm sorry, I still regard it as a privilege and not a right. And as a parent, I think, you know, who has not become disempowered? Who does not feel that the internet is like so much bigger than we are? But to me, that was like the good news of the experiment, was realizing that I could, you know, it's like a delusion. It is a delusion. I suffered under it, so I know, I can say this. The emperor does have no clothes. You can actually turn the freaking thing off. You can repossess the hardware. I'm not saying for all time, I'm not saying for 6 months, but I mean, you know, be a woman.
A number of schools are considering allowing students to bring their own device. Do you think this will add to or distract, given their educational experience?
Complicated question. You know, my youngest went to a school in Perth where its claim to fame, and it's a very, very good school, was that kids were started out on MacBooks from year two, I think. And that's, you know, that partly explains why Sassy was in a different universe to the rest of us. She plays that MacBook like a harp. It's a beautiful thing. It is, in a sense, beautiful because it's organic to who she is. You've got to respect that, just as print is organic to who I am. My mind is going in a million directions here because I'm thinking that the school that she went to that required the laptops for those kids, I criticized very openly and very vociferously, not only in the book, but in the national press in Australia. And then I was asked to write the centenary history of that school, which I've just finished doing. I guess I see both sides of the equation there. You have to have very strong filters in place if you're going to usefully allow students to bring devices into a classroom. I think, you know, to integrate laptop learning and the internet into the classroom experience is an amazing advantage if you use it well. I taught at Fordham University a few years ago when I first came back, and I hadn't taught since before the digital revolution. I wasn't used to having a screen that could project, you know, whatever I wanted to from the internet, and it was amazing. And I used it constantly. In fact, to the point that I felt like I was producing a TV show, you know, rather than, you know, giving a standard lecture, which I kind of liked because it was more fun to produce a TV show. However, I did not allow my students to use a laptop or their phones in class because I know what I'm like. I would be sitting, I have the attention span of a gnat. You know, I maybe wouldn't be on Facebook, but I'd be on something just as distracting. And I'd walk down the corridors of Fordham and see what the professors couldn't see, you know, from the door, you know, YouTube and eBay and Facebook and everything that was on while they were up there fruitlessly droning on to no purpose. Yes and no. You gotta do it well.
What if you watch your child hooked to that phone because she is, and she confesses this is so lonely?
Because she's lonely. She's hooked to the phone because she's lonely. Well, look, I mean, this is part of being a teenager. I mean, I was hooked to the phone when I was a teenager, only it was a landline. You know, I was on the phone for many hours a day. It's a almost like a primal need of, you know, adolescence to be in contact. And the point is, there's many ways of doing that. I don't think it's helpful to just, you know, kind of forcibly divest a child of her phone, even though I did it. But, you know, under the circumstances that I knew my kids and I knew what their resources and their options were, I think you do have to tread carefully, and I think you have to respect, you know, people's needs. I mean, God knows my need for reading is out of all proportion to what my kids' need for reading is. In fact, I have often thought about, but as my daughter points out, nobody would buy the book, I'd often thought about doing an experiment in which I deprive myself of reading and writing, that's my medium, for 6 months, and see how I like it. You know, like, and that's relatively new under the sun, too. The idea that you can be reading, that you have the leisure time to do it, that you have the access to books to do it. I mean, we think that's normal. That's not normal. Throughout most of human history, you know, even Thoreau, when he went to the woods, right? He only took a couple of books, and he stopped reading them after a while. And he wrote most of Walden afterwards. So, you know, like, what would it be like? What would the inside of your head be like if you didn't read? And if somebody told me, if somebody imposed that on me, God, I would be furious. But if I did it myself, I would think it was cool. And maybe if somebody bribed me, I would think it was cool. So consider cash. When all else fails, consider cash.
We have time for one more question. Do you have specific suggestions for early native childhood intervention? Angry Birds is now the new Winnie the Pooh.
This is very true. This is very true. And again, I kind of, you know, I see both sides here. If you've ever seen, and I'm sure you have, possibly in church, a toddler interacting with an iPad, it can be a religious experience. You know, it's wonderful. The child is so engaged. You know, there's you can see the learning going on often. You can see the little gears turning. You can see the delight in problem solving. You know, I mean, to suggest that there ought to be a blanket ban of some kind on iPads or on laptops or on games for children seems to me to be, you know, as short-sighted as Socrates. Did I just say that? Having said all that, to be honest with you, if I had to do it all over again with my kids, I would have started out the way I wanted to finish. I always said, and you know, despite my sort of pose of naivete, I have a PhD in media theory, so I kind of had a clue of how all of this was going to be affecting family dynamics from the start. But for various reasons, you know, I didn't stick to my guns. I didn't have the courage of my convictions. If I had to do it over again, I probably would have a screen-free house. And I know that sounds ridiculous. I wouldn't prohibit using technology anywhere else, but the idea of having your house a haven in a heartless digital world, it has tremendous appeal to me even still. But don't worry, kids, wherever you are. We did it. We're not doing it again.
Thank you, Susan.